Welcome to the Card and Lumen Society podcast. I am your host, Kevin Murphy. Today, we are joined by a special guest in our studio, special guest who's a lot warmer now in our office, in our cozy little office in the back of the Card and Lumen Society bunker here in Gainesville, Virginia. Since it is 13 degrees outside, we want to welcome you to our warm home, Dr. Tim Collins, the president.
Swords up. Walsh University, North Canton, Ohio. It was minus 10 when I left this morning. So out here, it's 20. Well, it's 15 right now. So that's a 25-degree swing in 5 hours. Feels pretty warm to me.
And you drove it.
I drove it in a cav car.
Oh, my gosh.
In a cav car. Moving bulletin board for the university.
We got to talk about that cav car, okay? I want to hear a little bit more about that. So welcome, first of all. The concept that I, when I first looked at the schools, the colleges, and now the schools in the K-12 that are on the Newman Guide, I look at these and I see Benedictines, and I see Franciscans, and I see Walsh. And now I'm from Missouri. I didn't hear of Walsh. I didn't know of Walsh. Meeting you, I'm sad that I didn't, because I think that you guys have some incredible things to offer. The benefit of this podcast is to let people know of those schools and colleges that are on the Newman Guide. Now, for the listener, the Newman Guide evaluates colleges and now schools in the K-12 market and also graduate programs, and says these schools are abiding by church teaching. They're teaching what the church teaches. They're doing what the church expects of a Catholic institution. And so out of 215, I believe, Catholic universities and colleges, there's about 23 that make the Newman Guide. Today, we are joined by Dr. Tim Collins, the president of Walsh University, who is one of them.
Yeah, thank you so much. So first, congratulations to you all for your 30th anniversary. I know we're on the back end of that. And while we were celebrating that here at Walsh University, we were celebrating our 10th year in association with you, in partnering with you in what we're all trying to do in terms of furthering Catholic education, which is a 936-year tradition. Now, most of your listeners may not even know it's the Catholic Church that invented higher education. So in 1079, the Pope put out a papal bull, think of it like an email, and in one of his asks, how do we take this idea of recording knowledge and preserving knowledge and learning things and share that with others? How do we do that? Because as we know, in the Catholic tradition, all knowledge comes to us from the same source. So the Catholic tradition has always been, the more you learn and grow, the closer you'll become, or you'll come to the source of that knowledge. So this is actually a Catholic thing. This is not Led Zeppelin. This is not the 70s called the Stairway to Heaven. That's actually how we get there. So in 1088, the University of Bologna in Italy opens its doors in response to that papal request. And so we continue that tradition, and that really is what Cardinal Newman Society has been doing for 30 years now, is helping us refocus as we find renewal, you know, in our age. Now, Walsh University is not obviously Catholic.
That's
because
right.
We're named after a bishop, Bishop Walsh, the Bishop of Youngstown. We're in our 64th year. We have always had a great relationship with our bishop, now currently Bishop Bonner, David Bonner, in the Diocese of Youngstown. But the Brothers of Christian Instruction were our sponsors, and they've now withdrawn back to their mother house in Alfred, Maine, because they haven't had vocations, right? This has been what's really happened over the last 50 years in America, is we've entered into this fourth age of higher education. It's the age of lay leadership. So we find ourselves now where I think Monsignor Shea at the University of Mary, I think Father Dave Provanca at Steubenville, those guys are dinosaurs. Right, they're the religious still in charge. They're the obvious, they must have a Catholic character because they have religious there. Well, when you don't have religious there, it's not that obvious.
Right.
And so, in fact, if you look 5 years ago, 6 years ago, of the 28 Jesuit universities, only four had a lay president like me, someone who's just a layman. Today, only four are religious.
Wow.
So Walsh University was called Walsh College when it was established. It was in Alfred, Maine, and it was built as many of the religious orders did. They established colleges to train their own. And that is the story of higher education in America. You know, when it hits Harvard, 1636, the first university here in America, it wasn't formed by Catholics. It was formed by Puritans, but still Christian, which was new, but this is post-Reformation. because all of those great medieval universities that we know, Oxford, Paris, Prague, Orleans, Heidelberg, all of them were 100% Catholic. So Harvard comes. In fact, if you go to the original seal of Harvard,
yes,
it says in Latin for Christ. Can you imagine if you and I ran around Harvard Square in Cambridge, Massachusetts today, they would run us out of town as we said, no, this is what you're supposed to be doing.
I have seen where actually Harvard and Yale at one time used to compete to see who could be the holiest.
Absolutely. But that's how it happened all across America. It was religious orders. It could have been Quakers or it could have been Wesleyans or Baptists. Of course, in the Catholic traditions, it was Benedictines and it was the sisters and so Jefferson fiddles around with public education a little bit, Lincoln with land-grant institutions like the Ohio State University. But it wasn't until the 20th century that we had the explosion of education, higher education. And so all through that, you know, all the religious orders, they named these schools after their founders, after saints in their order, after the Holy Mother of God. I mean, it was all of that. But when the brothers established La Monnaie College, they did the same thing. They named it after their founder, which is a guy named Father La Monnaie. So it's after the French Revolution, and there's two priests. They see the youth need education, so they go to the DeSalian brothers, like Christian Brothers University, and they say, hey, can you send us a couple priests because we need to educate the youth? And they said, we don't have enough.
Okay.
So the two priests, Father de la Monnaie, Father Duhay, they say, well, okay, we'll do it ourselves. Would you mind training them? So they find a couple guys, lay guys, and they send them to the DeSalian brothers for their novitiate, and they get trained up, and they bring back the rule, and then they establish the Brothers of Christian Instruction.
Okay.
100 years, you know, later kind of thing after the DeSalian brothers were established. And so they established themselves, and they became the second order of lay men that the Vatican approved as a religious congregation under papal approval, even though they aren't religious men. Okay. They still take vows of chastity, obedience, and poverty. And so their charism was education. So they established, as they roared through France, they came across Quebec, they came into America. It was all about K through 12, basically. And so they established a college, and they called it La Monnaie College in Alfred, Maine, to train themselves. Well, they decided in the 50s to move it. They were going to move it to the Midwest, and they were on their way to Michigan, where they thought they were going to do this, and they stopped in the Diocese of Youngstown. Now, Bishop Walsh had actually requested help, staffing, if you will, from the brothers a couple years prior. But the brothers had said no because they didn't have the manpower. But when they came through, Bishop Wall says, hey, why don't you do it here? I'll help you get the land. I'll build your residence. I'll get you going. I don't have anything here. And twisted their arm. So the brothers sat around and they said, okay, let's go do that. You know what a great guy that bishop is? Let's just name the school after him. So they came across, and so La Monnaie College became Walsh College. Opened its doors on the 17th of November in 1960, and we roared along.
Wow.
And so in 2020, during COVID, is when the brothers, basically, their mission was complete. They are up, we're on our feet, we're on a university, and so they've withdrawn. They're back now in Alfred, Maine. There's only a handful of them left, the American brothers, a booming congregation of men in Africa, but not, you know, here in North America.
And does that create any obstacles or difficulties for the university?
Yeah, it might. Okay. We've gone through a lot of work in the Catholic space about sponsorship, the changing nature of sponsorship. It had been looked at about 20 years ago. It was refreshed, you know, a couple years ago by the Association of Catholic Colleges and Universities, because we have a lot of different ways we're organized now. And as the culture has become more secular and pushed to the edges, God,
right,
and everything associated with that, it becomes more challenging to identify ourselves and to maintain the legal status we need to execute our mission in the way that we think is best, the way that we want to, align with constitutional protections. You know, there is no constitutional authority for the federal government to be in higher education. But, you know, they wind their way there because a lot of it has to do with money.
Finance, that's right.
And some of that, they execute it through accreditors. But all that's changing, like the Equality Act. We're not going to talk about that today. But the Equality Act, which is the next level of aggressiveness and overreach, it has nothing to do with money. It has everything to do with where you're geographically located. So if you're in the territory of the United States of America, it applies to you. Right. So no one is protected.
Is exempt. That's right.
Is exempt. So the brothers are still associated with us in a light sense. It's a light touch. We have a memorandum of agreement. The bishop, Grant, of course, he, you know, canonically authorizes us to be Catholic. It says right in canon law, you can't call yourself a Catholic school unless the bishop grants you that. Our bishop does. He's very, very supportive of Catholic education. As all the bishops, you know, where John Paul, I think, was very clear and affirmatively stating, you know, the bishops must support Catholic education. That's not an issue because the bishops, of course, have been trained and raised in the church. There's not a mission we have in the church that education is not at the center of it.
Right.
So the bishops understand that and appreciate that with what we're doing.
The thing about it, I think when you say that, it's very well stated. The problem is, what does that encompass? You know, when somebody talks about education, you know, I think people have a tendency to minimize the impact of that word. You know, I often talk about the Great Commission is, you know, the idea is to go forth and to teach. And so we're required to do that. But I often think when people hear it, they kind of minimize it or maybe put it into a section. Well, that's for the elementary kids, you know, yeah. Or that's for maybe the high school kids. But, you know, it's interesting because your college, which later becomes a university,
right,
was started at the time when this, you know, we began the massive decline.
Right. So we were sort of at the peak of Catholic education in America, you know, 5 million students, whatever it was. You know, now what, we're 1.2 billion.
5.2 to 1.6.
Yeah, so we're down 70%, you know, whatever the number is.
That's
there.
That's exactly right.
And so that long slide is right when we came on the scene. And, you know, at Walsh, locally, I call that Walsh 1.0, version 1.0. We became 2.0 when we became co-ed, because we started with just men. 67 gentlemen were the ones who showed up on the November 17th. And then Walsh 3.0 was when we became a university. And now we
and that
are.
Was?
That was 20 years ago, or okay. 1993, I guess, 30 years ago.
Okay.
And so now we're on to building, we're building Walsh 4.0. And everything has changed. And it starts with, you know, the walking away from understanding what is the purpose of education, right? In the culture, it wants to say, well, education is strictly utilitarian. We just need people with these skills. And if they have these skills, then they can do that function. If they do that function, that's all they need to do. And so today, it's 2024 right now, but as of 2023, it hasn't changed in the last 17 days. 23 states have now said that for all state jobs, remove degree requirements, mm-hmm. skills only. So we're almost at a tipping point in terms of how the culture is thinking about skills versus education.
We'll be right back. In the meantime, listen to our friend, Philip Brock, Vice President of Belmont Abbey College.
I kind of feel like I grew up in the Newman movement. My father was one of the earliest chairmen of the Board of Trustees of Christendom College. So I remember as a young boy going down there with him in the very early days and Dr. Carroll. Never did I know that years later I'd be working for a Newman Guide school and I would now have three of my own children attending Belmont Abbey College. On a very personal level, you know, it's helped me decide and discern where I should work and where my children should go to school. But more specifically, at Belmont Abbey, it is, you know, part and parcel to the brand of who we are. People know what you mean when you say you're a Newman Guide school, that you're serious and you're committed to teaching the truth and teaching love.
And so what we've been doing for 936 years, which I can't think of anything else that's lasted this long. You know, I used to think Sears Roebuck lasted a long time, right?
So we You're looking at my producer, who probably doesn't know what Sears Roebuck is.
Yeah, but some of your listeners will know what that is. Yes, he does. They're actually the ones with Craftsman Tools. Everybody knows Craftsman Tools.
Do you know Craftsman Tools?
Yeah. So, so we move into Ohio in 2019, and they deliver my stuff, and the washer and dryer, you know, everything comes to the house, and Drenda says, "Hey, Tim, the washer's broken. I need a new washer." Now, all my stuff is Craftsman. I have, you know, Kenmore appliances, Craftsman Tools, Craftsman lawnmower,
can't
everything.
Fix it.
So I say, "Hey, do we have Sears Roebuck here in Canton?" And Christine, my executive assistant, she says, "No, that's long gone. You go to Lowe's if you need a washer and dryer, because I know I need a washer and dryer. Drenda says the washer's broke, but I've been married a long time, so they need to match. So I got to go for a washer and a dryer." So I said, "Well, I thought that's where I got my lumber." And so Chris says, "Well, then go next door to Best Buy." I said, "Well, that's where I get my TV." She says, "Well, that's where you get a washer and dryer." So Sears only lasted 125 years.
Right.
But Catholic higher education, for 936 years, you know, we've talked about education in terms of the formation of men and women of character. It's about the whole person.
Yeah.
And it's about bringing the person so that they can live a life fully in service to others. It's not about turning widgets.
Yes.
You can turn widgets, and there's a lot of dignity in work. And there's lots of work you don't need a full education, certainly not to the degree level. I mean, in a bachelor's degree, only 7% of the entire world has ever attained that level of education. You know, in America, we think, oh, everybody has a bachelor's degree. That's not true.
Not true. No.
7 out of 100, that's all.
And becoming less true, because now, especially after COVID, as you mentioned, people are reassessing, questioning that. And so there's people saying, okay, as an education. Now, I want to hit on that because you hit such a key point about education. You know, I've said this several times now on podcasts, is that the Wall Street Journal just published their top colleges. And in their top colleges, they were looking at what colleges provide that student an ROI. In other words, where can I go and get my job that's going to pay me the most money so that I get an ROI for my education? And there's, in a sense, there's nothing wrong with that. But it also is an impoverishment of education, as you're saying, because it doesn't. Yeah. It does not look at the full person.
That's because it completely discounts this idea of purpose. Each and every one of us has a different purpose. We have a unique reason why we're here on Earth. I think in some reason, this is why we're seeing mental health challenges with the youth. We've stopped telling them, hey, you're special. There's some reason you're here. And so when they hit these nadirs, these low points, and they see everybody on TikTok and Yik Yak, and everybody's all happy, happy, and they're not the ones happy, they go, oh my gosh, I'm the only one. And then they make these unbelievable, terrible choices. But you know, this is the same culture that says by the time you're 17 years old, you're supposed to know, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? What do you want to be the rest of your life?
That's exactly right.
And this is not true. Look, 5 years ago, was your purpose the same as it is today?
No.
No, not at all. We know this. We know that it might take us our whole lives till we look back and say, oh, that's my purpose. So because the culture discounts purpose and doesn't understand it, in the most obvious way, it doesn't understand it because it says, find your purpose, find your passion, then you're happy.
Right.
Okay, that is complete and total nonsense. Happiness has nothing to do with purpose, and I'll prove this to you.
Okay.
Okay, so think about this, but don't ask the question out loud. What is it that makes you happy, that makes you happiest? Everyone, the listeners. I'm going to bet a York peppermint patty right here that something flashed through your mind and Chris's mind and the mind of our listeners. When I ask a question, what does it make you happy? Something flashed through your mind where you're doing something for someone else. You're doing something for a loved one. You're doing something for a parent. You're doing something for that little old man that can't open the door at Walmart. So when you do that, you have that little bit of happiness. Okay, what does that have to do with if you're a plumber or a politician or an educator or an engineer? It has nothing to do with it. And in fact, the problem is happiness is fleeting. It's fragile. It's going to go away. So when you discover your purpose, it's not that surface level kind of happiness. It's something so deep, so down there. Thomas Aquinas tells us it's the mark of a Christian, and it's called joy. Mm-hmm. And so when you are aligned with your purpose, when you're doing what you should be doing, you have such a deep feeling of satisfaction that there's no other answer. But the culture doesn't want to explain all that. They don't understand that. And so that's why people walk away from degrees, because they walk away from education and they think you just need to learn this skill, learn how to do X.
And get out and you'll be good. And quickly get employed, right? I mean, as a matter of fact, what they're talking about is shortening the distance between the person at whatever age immediately acquiring whatever skill and then getting out and applying that skill. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting you say that, because we just talked about this, which was the notion of mission. St. John Henry Newman said, "I have my mission. God has created me for a definite service. There is something he wants me to do. And now I may not know it, right? I may not know it, but this is what we're telling young people." And I think this is exactly what you said about young people experiencing mental health issues on our campuses today, because nobody tells them they have a mission.
Except for the Cardinal Newman School, recommended schools.
That's right.
We all tell them that.
So that is exactly why we have to let everybody know of places like Walsh, because look, you come down to making that choice for your student, and there's a lot of factors people think. Costs, location, majors, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I can tell you this, almost every college, I had a program where I visited colleges prior to coming to the Cardinal Newman Society, so I visited all kinds of colleges. And inevitably, it came down to the same thing. The first major on campus was undeclared. The second major on campus was the broadest major that people could go into. Sometimes that was a safety major.
Sure.
Sometimes that was a business administration major, something like that. But they went into it because, well, it gets me a degree, and then I go out, and then I got to figure out what I want to do. It's just postponing the idea of what exactly do you want to focus on.
Right. And that's because they approach it, they arrive at the schools, when I have to focus, it goes back to your point about wages, that ROI. Where we know the data, if you really look at the data, the ROI for a liberal arts education is not in the first 3 to 5 years of graduation. It's, you know, midlife and beyond is where sort of the ROI comes back. And so the current federal government focus on this with the financial value, you know, calculations and all that is that if you're really going to hold it to some sort of a ratio of how much debt you have to discretionary income and compare it to a high school graduate, who's going to train educators, counselors, social workers? These are actually the people that make this country go.
Right.
And they're not out there, sadly, you know, making the kind of wages that a mechanical engineer will make or a nuclear engineer will make, because we don't place the value on the human experience and on service that we place on cranking out a gonculator.
So it's funny, yesterday's discussion with Patrick Riley on the letter from Pope Benedict on the urgent task of educating young people talks specifically about this idea of sacrificial love. You mentioned it. When you give of yourself, you find happiness a lot of times. People will find, like you said, if they pictured what they were doing something for somebody, that they feel better about themselves through that sacrificial love.
Yeah.
I mean, where else? I mean, in the teaching ranks, in the professor ranks, where else can you see sacrificial love? Because, I mean, let's face it, those aren't paid well positions, but those are positions that people need if we're going to continue to produce well-formed individuals.
Yeah. Well, you know, service is a very interesting concept, which has all but left the conversation publicly, as has the common good. It's all but evaporated. So I think we're sort of at a low point there. But you can look at all kinds of people that in their life are living a life of service. You could take, you know, I'm a retired Air Force officer, so I look at airmen and soldiers and sailors and Coast Guardsmen and the people that are out there every day to day. They're serving, and what are they doing? You know, they're defending life. We can see first responders all day long. Firemen, policemen, ambulance drivers, what are they doing? You know, they're protecting lives. And then I can turn on my own campus, our nursing program. What are they doing? They're saving lives. So we have lots of people that are doing service, but the culture does not honor service. In fact, what the culture does is it uses supposedly service as a path to power to then turn around and do what you think you should want to do. Not what the all of us need to get done, but what you as that individual, because they haven't been educated in understanding how the connections go from the additional intellectual and moral virtues that you have been instructed on and how those apply to help others, which is really service.
So let's back up for a second. A person wants to go to Walsh. Do you tell them this when they arrive on the campus? Do you, I mean, in other words, is there like an orientation where a student comes and hears this?
Yeah, we are very upfront about living our mission. I call this integrity and mission. So we say we're going to build leaders in service to others. I sometimes say men and women, because I think when you say leaders, often for young people, they put that in a box. Oh, I'm an accountant. Oh, I'm a nurse. I'm not a leader. Well, you know, if you're driving down the road and you pull over for that emergency vehicle going the opposite direction, and as it passes you, you look in your rearview mirror and you have 8 cars lined up behind you, I would argue you were just now a leader. So when they come on campus, leaders in service to others, values-based education, Judeo-Christian tradition. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. And we're going to be true about that. The Catholic education in its fullest sense in the formation of a person. And we're going to tell them that. Now, for some, that doesn't resonate with them. I just want to be a nuclear engineer. Okay, you're probably in the wrong school.
Right.
And that's fine. You know, if your purpose is to be John the Baptist as an accountant, then, you know, you might need to go to the University of Illinois, because that's got like a rock star accounting program, and be in the Newman Center there, not necessarily a graduate at Walsh University or another Catholic place. So purpose, this is what we're trying to help the students figure out, you know, where is it that resonates with them and feels with them? You know, a third of the graduates today in higher education are not graduating at the school they started at.
One third of all college students transfer, and half of those do it more than once.
Right. So that tells me, I don't know the research on this, I can't figure this out completely, there's some sort of a conflict between the head and the heart when they make this college choice. And so what we try to tell them is, you got to bring your heart into the conversation. Now, your heart can lie to you. We learned this growing up, you know, our first boyfriend, our first girlfriend. Okay, she's the love of my life. I'm good to go. And then, no, that didn't work out.
Then a week later.
Yeah, she dumped me. So we have to bring the heart into that. But we talk a lot about our mission. We talk about, you know, the formation of the whole person, you know, physically, intellectually, emotionally, socially, spiritually, all of it. When they roam around the campus, you know, we have over 40 hours a week of Eucharistic adoration going on. In fact, Monday to Friday, anytime. You know, it's gone somewhere. So we show them the signs and the symbols. In fact, you know, Archbishop Miller, who was the president at University of St. Thomas, and I think he's now in Vancouver. I think he's a bishop of Vancouver. But, you know, in the early 2000s, he was the secretary for the Congregation of Education. And he offered 5 essential marks,
right.
That's what he called them, you know, for Catholic education. And one of those, you know, his last one was that you sustain it, you know, by being a witness to the gospel. So as we walk students around and we talk to them and we tell them about what kind of activities we do and we don't do, a lot of them are there on our campus because of Cardinal Newman Society. They are looking for truth. They're trying to find a place that's willing to tell them the truth. And so as we show them, you know, we show them everything. Mm-hmm. We're just authentic. This is who we are. You know, some schools, sadly, oh, you're the grandparents, I'll show you the chapel.
Right.
And if you're the kids, let me show you the gym. And it's that kind of a thing. And we just sort of are very level about all of that, because they have to pick.
Well, and then you have to be, because what happens in the scenario where you're not is that person comes in and transfers. Yeah. I mean, and then you have this high turnover, right? And then you don't have the community that probably you should have. And there's so many repercussions
right.
from
so
that.
So community and communion, that's another one of those essential marks that the Archbishop, you know, talked about. COVID kind of destroyed all that. But people are looking for, where can I go? And for either as a student or for my students, if you're the parents, You know, grandparents are now major funders, so they now have a leading role in deciding where they go to school. But where will they go? Will they learn how to think instead of just being told what to think? This is why this disaster that's happened, you know, in the last couple months with over Hamas, with higher education, and the lens that the whole country gets to look through at places of higher education, it's because we're not speaking the truth. And when you don't speak the truth, it's hard to come clean. Look, those three presidents that, you know, got up there and testified on the Hill, I give them an A, right? They took legal advice, they gave it, and they don't see it.
Right.
They don't see. All they had to say was, look, as an American value, we condemn mass murder. They couldn't even say that.
Yeah.
Because, of course, if they would say that, then the next question is, well, what about this other club? Well, what about that club? Well, what about this activity? It's not just these, you know, one anti-Semitic element.
No, there's on a lack of campus. There is a lack of coherency,
unity
that they can't tell the full story. One domino leads to another. That's the beauty of the Cardinal Newman Society having a Newman guide and asking very specific questions about, do you do this? Do you offer this? And so
exactly, because there's unity in what you're doing. All this has got to be connected, and the glueware is the truth. You know, for us, we break it down simple. Here's our guideline. Don't lie to students. That's it.
Yeah, we can't stand for that. I'm sorry.
You know, offer other views. You should offer what the culture is. I think one of the things that, you know, Patrick certainly has focused in on for a long time, the last 10 years or so, I think, you know, Cardinal Newman has sort of changed a little bit. But it has been making sure they're intellectually prepared for the arguments. And so you have to offer an education that prepares them, because when they go out, look, I live in Ohio right now, and I'm still a little stunned about what just happened on the abortion change to the Constitution.
Yes.
And in my county, at Stark County, I'm like, I thought Ohio was pretty, you know, mainstream. 2019, I'm at Kent State University for the president's inauguration, and they don't play the national anthem. And they say, we can't play that. It's too divisive. Mm. That was my first clue. Wait a minute. Ohio's changing here. But now, you know, two out of every three people standing around me think it's okay on the baby's due date to take the life. So our students are going to go out into that world. So they have to be prepared individually and then be ready to take care of their families and then their communities. Because that's what college graduates do. They lead everywhere, wherever they are.
We're going to take a quick break and come back with President Collins from Walsh University. I want to come back and I want to talk about exactly what kind of a student. We've talked about different things, but what kind of a student shows up at the doorstep of Walsh University, and what kind of a student should show up? What are you looking for? As we make sure that people know that Walsh University is distinctly Catholic on the Newman Guide, we want to make sure that they know that. We want them to have that experience. What's a way for them to gain that experience in a short haul? We'll talk all about those things when we return.
Swords up.
If you'd like to learn more about how you can help promote and defend faithful Catholic education, go to CardinalNewmanSociety.org. Also, if you're interested in promoting and defending faithful Catholic education wherever it is found, subscribe to the Cardinal Newman Society podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform.